Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome to Creepy Shit Podcast. I'm your host, Star. Every week, we're digging into real hauntings, paranormal encounters that'll make your skin crawl, and true crime cases that prove reality is way scarier than fiction. This is where we sit down, like the creepy weirdos we are, and unpack the darkest, most disturbing stories out there. And here's the thing. We're probably going to use some sarcasm and humor to get through some of this heavy stuff, because if we don't laugh, we'll definitely cry. So settle in and let's get to it, because sometimes the creepiest shit is also the truest. This is Creepy Shit Podcast. All right. I got another good little holiday thing here. This is kind of an interesting spin when I came across this, because I was like, interesting. It's the time of year when, you know, we're starting to think about the new year and what we want to do better with ourselves, how we want to improve ourselves. And would you or would you not say that at least 90% of people are like, oh, I'm going to eat better, I'm going to do better, I'm going to work out more, those kind of things, right? Well, maybe after hearing this story today, you might want to think about that twice, because you know how we've talked about plagues and diseases that have wiped out like civilizations? And I'll admit, it's been a minute since we have chatted about a medical mystery, specifically, probably not since like episode 2 when we talked about encephalitis lethargica. Well, anyway, forget everything you know about medieval death, because what I'm about to tell you makes the Black Plague look like a fucking common cold, I shit you not. So here's what I want you to picture. It's 1485. Henry VII just won the Battle of Bosworth Field, killed Richard III, and is about to be crowned the first Tudor king. England's finally getting its shit together after decades of civil war. And then something arrives. Something that would make nobles and peasants alike literally sweat themselves to death in a matter of hours. They called it the sweating sickness. And friends, this isn't your typical, oh, people died because they didn't wash their hands medieval tale. This is something else entirely. Something that defied every rule of disease we thought we knew, and something that some people believe never really left. So go grab your favorite bevy, preferably something stronger than tea today, and let's dive into one of England's most terrifying medical mysteries, because by the time we're done here, you're going to understand why some historians think this wasn't just a disease, it was a curse. Here we go. Now, when I first started researching this, and before I put all my notes and my things together for this, I honestly kept wanting to dismiss this whole thing, because I was like, seriously, a sweating disease? Like, they fucking had the flu. Like, it's nothing more than the flu. And then after diving deeper, and I'm so glad I stuck with this, because holy shit, this is just crazy. So let me just set the scene for you and get the ball rolling, because it's August 1485. Henry Tudor has just become Henry VII, and London is just buzzing with coronation preparations. The city's packed with nobles, merchants, soldiers, everyone who's anyone is there to witness the dawn of the Tudor dynasty. And then people start dying. But here's the thing that makes it so freaking creepy. They don't just die. They die weird, like unnaturally weird. The sweating sickness didn't give a shit about your social status, your age, or how healthy you were. Rich or poor, young or old, it would grab you, and within hours, sometimes less, you'd be dead. But the way it killed, that is seriously what haunts me about this story. Victims would suddenly be struck with violent shivering, even on warm days. Then came the fever. And not just any fever, creepy crew. Like one so intense that witnesses described people as literally steaming, like steam was coming off their bodies. Their clothes would be soaked through with, and the smell, oh God, the smell, I can't even imagine, was apparently so bad that people would flee buildings when someone got sick. But here's where it gets really disturbing. Unlike other diseases that made people weak or like bedridden, the sweating sickness kept its victims conscious and alert right until the end. They knew exactly what was happening to them. They could feel their bodies betraying them hour by hour, and there wasn't a damn thing anyone could do about it. That is seriously terrifying. Truly terrifying. So, Dr. John, and I think you say it, Caius, is a physician who lived through multiple outbreaks of this, wrote that people would die in 4 and 20 hours at the most. So not even making it through like a whole day. Sometimes it would be within 12 hours, 8, 6, 4, and sometimes only two hours. Imagine going from perfectly healthy to completely unalive in 2 hours, and you're fully aware the entire time. That's fucking terrifying. That is seriously terrifying. Now, I'm going to get into this a little bit further because this is where the story, of course, always has a weird turn, right? And why I think there might be more to this than just some like random medieval plague. The sweating sickness appeared 5 times in England between 1485 and 1551. 5 distinct outbreaks, each one seemingly coming out of nowhere and disappearing just as mysteriously. But here's the kicker. It's almost exclusively targeted to the English. Now think about that for a second. In the 1500s, trade routes connected England to the entire known world, right? Ships were constantly coming and going, carrying all sorts of diseases between countries. But the sweating sickness, it stayed put. It would occasionally hop over to continental Europe, but it always came back to England like some kind of like homing pigeon from hell. I don't know. Even weirder, it seemed to have preferences, if that makes sense. It loved cities, but avoided rural areas. It targeted the wealthy more than the poor, which is the complete opposite of most diseases. And get this, it apparently had a thing for intellectuals, and clergy. Scholars, priests, nobles, they dropped like flies, while peasants working in the fields remained largely untouched. What kind of disease acts like that? What kind of natural phenomenon picks and chooses its victims based on social class and education level? Well, our Dr. John noted something else that chills me to the bone. He said the disease seemed to follow certain people. There are documented cases of individuals who survived one outbreak only to be struck down by the next one, as if something was keeping track, as if something was waiting. No, thank you. No, thank you. These are the times that I'm very glad that I'm not like Oprah Rich. I'm just saying. Okay, so this is where we start to get into another layer of truly, really creepy shit. And I want you to keep an open mind here, because some of this stuff, I don't know how else to explain it. It's fucked, like, honestly. So the first outbreak of sweating sickness began right after the Battle of Bosworth Field. Now, that battle wasn't just any battle, you guys. It was where Richard III died, and with him, the plantation, like that plantation dynasty that had ruled England for over 300 years. Richard III, if you remember your Shakespeare, was accused of murdering his own nephews, the princes in the Tower, if you remember that story. This guy died screaming, "A horse, a horse, my kingdom for a horse," as his enemies literally trampled him into the mud. Damn. Now, some historians and folklore enthusiasts have suggested that the sweating sickness was connected to this violent end. These violent ends have violent delights. Okay, sorry. Violent end of this line. Like, the land itself was rejecting the new Tudor rule, or spirits of those wronged by Richard III were taking their revenge on anyone who might support the new regime. But here's yet another layer of just something really interesting. And there are reports, and I'm talking documented reports from the time, of strange phenomenon accompanying these outbreaks. So in 1528, during the third outbreak, multiple witnesses in London reported seeing a great black dog roaming the streets at night. This wasn't just one or two drunk people. We're talking like merchants and night watchmen and even some clergy. They described a massive black hound with glowing red eyes that would appear near homes where people were about to fall ill with the sweating sickness. I have got a very vivid picture of this dog, and I love dogs, but I'm massively creeped out presently by that. Now, in English folklore, black dogs were omens of death. They were called by different names: Black Shuck, the Bargest, the Grim, but they all serve the same purpose. They herald death. And during the sweating sickness outbreaks, these sightings spiked dramatically. And there's one account that particularly sticks with me. It's a merchant named Thomas Whitmore, who wrote in his diary about seeing the black dog outside his neighbor's house. He said the creature was as large as a calf, and that when it looked at him, he felt a coldness enter his very soul. That is a quote. His neighbor died of sweating sickness 3 hours later. Whitmore himself then fell ill the next day, but somehow survived. What? What? But the black dogs weren't the only supernatural activity reported during these outbreaks. Some of the most chilling accounts come from the Greenwich Palace, where Henry the Eighth's court was staying during 1528 outbreak. Greenwich Palace was where Henry the Eighth was born, where he married Catherine of Aragon, where his daughter Elizabeth would later be born. It was the heart of Tudor power. And during the sweating sickness outbreak of 1528, it became a house of horrors. Contemporary accounts describe courtiers falling ill, dying so rapidly that bodies were being removed from the palace at all hours of the day and night. But that's okay. But what's really disturbing are the reports of paranormal activity that began during this time, and according to some sources, never stopped. Palace servants reported hearing the sound of people weeping and moaning in empty rooms, rooms where victims of the sweating sickness had died. They described feeling sudden, inexplicable drops in temperature in certain corridors, even during the height of summer. And some people reported seeing figures of like Tudor era clothing wandering the halls, people who would disappear when approached. Why do they always got to disappear? Like, can't you just hang out for a second and can we talk? Like, who pissed you off so bad that you need to disappear? That's what I want to know. But I digress. But the most terrifying reports came from the royal apartments themselves. Multiple witnesses claim to have seen a woman in white roaming the palace at night, particularly in areas where victims had died. She was described as beautiful, but with an expression of like absolute despair. And anyone who saw her would feel an overwhelming sense of dread. Henry the Eighth himself reportedly encountered this figure. According to a letter written by one of his courtiers, the king he woke up one night to find a woman standing at the foot of his bed. When he called for his guards, she vanished. The next morning, three more people in the palace died of the sweating sickness. I'm sorry, that's not a coincidence. It's just not. How could that possibly be a coincidence? I don't believe it for a second. And what's really fucked up is that sightings of this white lady of Greenwich continued long after the sweating sickness disappeared. She's been reported as recently as the 1970s, always in the same areas where the victims died centuries ago. Now, I mentioned earlier that the sweating sickness seemed to target intellectuals and clergy like disproportionately. Let me tell you about some of the specific cases because they're absolutely haunting. In 1551, during what would be the final outbreak, Cambridge University was decimated. We're not talking about a few professors getting sick. We're talking about the systematic destruction of one of England's greatest centers of learning. The outbreak at Cambridge began in the library. A scholar named Dr. Robert Pemble was found dead at his desk, slumped over an ancient manuscript. The weird thing? The manuscript he was reading was about medieval plagues and diseases. Specifically, it contained descriptions of symptoms that matched the sweating disease, but it was written decades before the first outbreak. Now, other scholars who tried to study this manuscript also fell ill. Within a week, five of Cambridge's most brilliant minds were gone, dead. The manuscript itself was quarantined and eventually disappeared from the university's records entirely. Oh, that's creepy. That's creepy. Like, you know it's got to be true if they're getting rid of it. I'm just saying. I mean, I'm not here to tell you what to believe. I'm just, my own commentary here on that. But here's where it gets really, really spooky. Students and faculty reported that the library became wrong after these deaths. People described feeling watched while studying, hearing whispers in empty rooms, and finding books moved or opened to different pages overnight. Some students claimed they could hear Dr. Pemble's voice reading aloud in Latin during the late night hours. Oh my gosh, like seriously? Ooh, that's like spooky good. I like that. Oh my gosh, could you imagine sitting in a library and hearing somebody reading aloud? Oh, that'd be so good. And the most disturbing report came from a student named William Fletcher. He wrote to his father that he had seen Dr. Pemble's ghost sitting at his usual desk, still hunched over his books, but his face was, quote, and I quote, gray as ash, and his eyes held the light of fever, end quote. Fletcher died of the sweating sickness 3 days later. I'm sorry. What? And you know what's really, like, if this isn't like totally messed up enough, you want to know what's really messed up about the sweating sickness? The doctors couldn't do shit about it. And I mean that literally. They had no clue what they were dealing with. Our friend Dr. John, who I mentioned earlier, was one of the few physicians who survived multiple outbreaks and tried to document everything. His writings are some of our best sources about this disease, but they're also deeply disturbing because you can sense his growing terror and frustration. I am not kidding. In his later writings, Dr. John began to suspect that the sweating sickness wasn't entirely natural. He noted that traditional treatments not only did not work, they seemed to make things worse, which they would do bloodletting, which of course like was the go-to treatment for almost everything at that time. And it appeared to accelerate the death. Herbal remedies that worked on other fevers had absolutely no effect on this whatsoever. But what really got to Dr. John was the pattern of deaths among his fellow physicians. Doctors who treated the sweating sickness victims didn't just die at higher rates, they died in ways that defied medical understanding. He wrote about Dr. Thomas Linacre, Henry VIII's personal physician, who treated several sweating sickness victims during the 1928 outbreak. Linacre was known for his extreme caution and very good hygiene. The guy would barely touch patients without gloves and masks, but he still contracted the disease and died within hours. And again, if that's not creepy enough, here's a creepier part. Witnesses said Lineker's final words were, quote, "It knows. It knows I tried to understand it," unquote. What the fuck does that mean? What knows? Who knows? Like, what was he trying to understand? Seriously, that's really creepy. Really creepy. I don't like it. I don't like that. I really don't. So Dr. John himself reported experiencing strange phenomenon while treating patients. He described feeling an overwhelming sense of being watched, hearing voices in languages he didn't recognize, and having vivid nightmares about his patients even after they had passed. Ugh. In one particularly disturbing passage, he wrote, and I quote, "I began to suspect that this m'lady is not of this world, but rather a visitation from realms unknown. It acts not as other diseases, but with an intelligence and purpose that chills my very soul," end quote. Whew. I don't know about you guys, but I just got goosies. Tell me that did not give you goosies. For real. Now, the last outbreak of sweating sickness occurred in 1551, and it was the most virulent yet. It struck faster, it killed quicker, and seemed more selective than ever before. But then, just as suddenly as it had appeared 66 years earlier, it vanished completely. And I mean completely. One day, people were dying left and right, and the next day, nothing. No new cases, no lingering symptoms, no gradual decline. It just stopped, as if someone had flipped a switch. This disappearance is almost as mysterious as the disease itself. Like, is it not? Most plagues burn out gradually, right? As populations develop immunity or the pathogen evolves to be less deadly. But the sweating sickness didn't follow these rules. It left as abruptly and mysteriously as it arrived. But did it really leave? Because here's where things get interesting from a paranormal perspective. After 1551, there was no more mass outbreaks of sweating sickness, but there were isolated incidences, individual deaths with identical symptoms that continued to pop up for centuries afterwards. And again, always in England, always following the same pattern, always targeting specific types of people. These isolated cases were often dismissed as rare fevers or unusual heat strokes. But when you look at the documented symptoms and the circumstances, I'm telling you, they match the sweating sickness perfectly. Perfectly. Now, here's where the story gets really contemporary, as it does creepy. Because even though the sweating sickness disappeared over 400 years ago, like it's a ghost, literal or metaphorical, seems to still haunt certain places in England. I'm not kidding. So let me tell you about Sutton Place in Surrey. This Tudor mansion was built in the 1520s, right during the height of the sweating sickness outbreaks. Historical records show that several members of the household died during the 1528 outbreak, including the master of the house, which was Sir Richard Weston. Fast forward now to the 20th century. Sutton Place has changed hands multiple times, but there have been consistent reports of paranormal activity that seems directly connected to the sweating sickness deaths. In 1956, the American oil billionaire J. Paul Getty bought this mansion. Getty and his staff reported numerous disturbing incidents. Sudden temperature drops in specific rooms, the smell of sickness and decay appearing without source, and most disturbingly, the sound of people gasping for breath in empty rooms. Oh, that is very uncomfortable. I don't like that. Getty's personal secretary, Barbara Wallace, documented several encounters with what she described as fever ghosts, apparitions of people who appeared to be suffering from intense illness, sweating profusely, and struggling to breathe. These figures would appear primarily in rooms where historical records showed sweating sickness victims had died. Oh, please tell me they left a puddle. I know that's really sick and twisted, but that would just be so interesting. But here's the really fucked up part. Several visitors to Sutton Place reported feeling physically ill after encountering these apparitions. Not just scared or uneasy, actually like fevering and sweating. Most recovered after leaving the property, but a few required medical attention. And P.S., there was never any puddles. I never found anything on that. I really wish I could have, but I didn't. So in 1982, a paranormal investigation team spent a week at Sutton Place. Their report, which you can actually find copies of this online, documents multiple instances of electronic equipment malfunctioning, going back to the extreme temperature fluctuations and what they described as residual thermal impressions. Areas where their infrared cameras detected body heat signatures despite no living person being present. So backing it up just a titch here, remember that manuscript from Cambridge that I mentioned earlier? The one that Dr. Pemble was reading when he died? Well, that story has a modern twist that's going to blow your mind. In 1987, a graduate student named Sarah Morrison was researching medieval medical texts in Cambridge archives when she came across a reference to this lost manuscript. She became obsessed with finding it, spending months digging through old records and storage areas. She finally found it in a sealed box in the basement of the old library building. The manuscript was exactly as described in the historical accounts, handwritten descriptions of plague symptoms that perfectly matched the sweating sickness, but dated decades before the first outbreak. She began translating the manuscript for her thesis, but here's where it gets weird. She started having dreams about medieval Cambridge, about scholars dying at their desks, about a disease that moved through the university like an intelligent predator. The dreams became so vivid and disturbing that she began recording them, thinking they might be psychologically inspiration by her research, like she was hoping that that would happen. But when she compared her dream descriptions to historical accounts of the 1551 outbreak, they matched in details that weren't included in any of the sources that she had access to. Morrison eventually abandoned her research and changed her thesis topic entirely. Girl, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. But not before she made a disturbing discovery. The manuscript contained not just descriptions of the sweating sickness symptoms, but what appeared to be instructions for summoning or invoking the disease. Oh my gosh, seriously. The text was written in a mixture of Latin and what appeared to be like really old Celtic languages. Morrison's rough translation suggested that the manuscript described the sweating sickness not as a natural disease, but as a form of spiritual punishment or as a supernatural weapon that could be called upon during times of great political upheaval. Whoa. Okay. Morrison sealed the manuscript back in its box and never really spoke publicly about her findings. But she had her private notes, which were donated to the university archives after her death in 2019. She believed the manuscript was some kind of instruction manual written by practitioners of medieval magic who were trying to influence the outcome of England's political struggles. Wow. Honestly, I don't think she's too far off. Like, really. Now, this brings us to one of the most compelling theories about the sweating sickness. And honestly, it's the one that makes my skin crawl every time I think about it. And I'm telling you right now, oh my gosh, take a sip. Just take a sip of whatever you got before we get into this part. Some historians and paranormal researchers believe that the sweating sickness wasn't random at all. They think it was deliberately summoned or invoked as part of a supernatural campaign to establish and maintain Tudor rule over England. Think about that timeline. The disease first appears after Henry VII wins the Battle of Bosworth and becomes king. It strikes primarily at the educated classes, the people most likely to organize resistance to the new regime. It targets nobles and wealthy merchants who might have resources to fund rebellions, and it disappears for good right around the time that Elizabeth I's rule becomes firmly established and the Tudor dynasty is secure. According to this theory, the sweating sickness was essentially a supernatural weapon used to eliminate political threats to the Tudor family. The disease would lie dormant until the dynasty faced a crisis, then emerge to eliminate key opponents. This would totally explain why the disease seemed to follow certain people, like why it targeted the educated and the wealthy and why it appeared and disappeared so mysteriously. It wasn't behaving like a natural disease because it wasn't a natural disease. It was a curse. The theory also explains the paranormal activity associated with the outbreaks. If the sweating sickness was summoned through occult means, it would make sense that its victims' deaths were spiritually traumatic, leaving behind restless spirits and supernatural disturbances. Now, I know this sounds like complete fantasy, but here's the thing. The Tudor period was absolutely steeped in occult practices. Henry VIII's court included several known practitioners of magic and alchemy. Elizabeth I famously consulted with John Dee, one of England's most notorious occultists. And the idea that the Tudors might have used supernatural means to secure their rule isn't as far-fetched as it may seem. And there's another aspect to this mystery that's always fascinated and disturbed me, for that matter. The possibility that some physicians of the time knew more about the sweating sickness than they were willing to admit publicly. I think that's absolutely, absolutely possible. I mean, it was a much more secretive, hush-hush world back then as well. So our friend Dr. John, our primary source for this information about the disease, wrote extensively about its symptoms and progression. But if you read his work carefully, there are hints that he suspected something beyond natural causes. In his private correspondence, which wasn't discovered until the 1800s, Dr. John wrote about consulting with practitioners of the old knowledge, a euphemism that historians believe referred to practitioners of folk magic or witchcraft. He described meetings held in secret, discussions about spiritual malignancies and attempts to combat the disease through non-medical means. In one particularly disturbing letter, Dr. John wrote, the malady responds not to psychic, but to older arts. Those who know the ancient ways speak of appeasement rather than cure, of bargains made in shadow rather than healing wrought in light. Wow. Okay. So what kind of bargains? What ancient ways exactly? Unfortunately, our doctor was frustratingly vague in this correspondence, possibly because he was afraid of being accused of witchcraft himself, which would totally make sense. But there are other hints scattered throughout historical records, Several physicians who survived multiple outbreaks left behind cryptid notes in journals that suggest they believe the sweating sickness was supernatural in origin. So Dr. Thomas, I believe you say it Fier, it's P-H-A-E-R. I'm going to go with Fier. Okay. Who treated victims during the 1951, I'm sorry, it's 1551 outbreak, wrote about consulting with wise women and cunning men, traditional healers who practice folk magic. According to his notes, these practitioners claimed the disease was a form of spiritual contagion that would only be stopped through ritual means. Now, Dr. Thomas described participating in what he called ceremonies of protection performed by these folk healers. He was deliberately vague about the details, but he claimed that these rituals were more effective at preventing infection than any other form of actual medical treatment. So, here's where this story gets really contemporary and unsettling, because even though the sweating sickness officially disappeared in 1551, there have been modern cases that are almost impossible to explain. In 1978, a medical researcher named Dr. Patrick Holbrook was investigating historical diseases for the World Health Organization. He became particularly interested in the sweating sickness and began collecting samples from archaeological sites where victims were buried. Holbrook was trying to extract DNA and other biological evidence that might finally identify what the disease actually was. He spent months working with remains from several Tudor-era graveyards, particularly focusing on mass burial sites from the 1528 outbreak. But then something weird happened. Holbrook began experiencing symptoms that matched historical descriptions of the sweating sickness perfectly. Sudden onset of violent shivering, followed by intense fever, profuse sweating. His colleagues were baffled. There were no modern disease that presented exactly these types of symptoms. And here's the thing. Holbrook, he died within 18 hours of first showing symptoms. His death was officially attributed to a, quote, unknown viral infection. But several of his colleagues privately questioned this diagnosis. The symptoms were too specific, too perfectly matched to historical accounts. And even more disturbing, two more researchers who worked with the same archaeological samples died within the next 6 months, both with identical symptoms, and the World Health Organization quietly shut down the investigation and sealed all related materials. What the actual fuck? Oh my gosh. But the story, seriously, the story though, this story doesn't end there. In 1995, which really, when you think about it, that's not really all that long ago, or maybe I'm just old. I mean, whatever, I digress. Another researcher tried to access Holbrook's sealed files for a different project. Dr. Jennifer Walsh was studying medieval diseases and thought Holbrook's research might be relevant to her work. Okay, that's fair. That's totally fair. Walsh managed to get limited access to some of Holbrook's notes and samples. Within a week, she began reporting strange experiences, dreams about medieval England, visions of people dying in ways that matched historical accounts of the sweating sickness, and an overwhelming sense of being watched while working in her laboratory. Walsh abandoned her research after 2 weeks and destroyed all her notes. She later told colleagues that she believed Holbrook's samples were spiritually contaminated. Girl, I believe you. And that attempting the study of the sweating sickness was inherently dangerous. Okay, just, I'm going to put a disclaimer in here. If I suddenly, like, come down with something just on sharing this story, you know this is all true. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. If I suddenly break out in a sweat for no apparent reason and it's not a hot flash, something's going on. Okay, just saying. So these incidents suggest that the mystery of the sweating sickness isn't just historical. It might still be actively dangerous to investigate. That is creepy. That is creepy. Oh my gosh. Like, on it. Yep. Nope. Like, I, yep. Nope. I'm not even going to touch it. Like, I wanted to be a doctor when I was a kid. I'm glad I'm not a doctor. And nope, I don't. Nope. Uh-uh. So here we are, right? Over 400 years after the last official outbreak, and we still don't know what the sweating sickness actually was. Was it a virus that somehow went extinct? A bacterial infection that evolved out of existence? Some kind of environmental poisoning that was mistaken for a disease? Or was it something else entirely? Something that doesn't fit into our understanding of natural diseases? Something that was summoned rather than caught, controlled rather than spread, and dismissed rather than cured? The evidence is so flipping frustrating, like, seriously, because it points in so many different directions. The medical symptoms were real and well documented. The deaths were genuine and devastating, but the pattern of the outbreaks, the selectivity of the victims, and the supernatural phenomenon that accompanied the disease suggests something beyond conventional medicine. What really gets me is how cleanly the disease just poof disappeared. Natural diseases don't just vanish like that. Like, I know that I didn't become a doctor, but I know that. They don't just vanish. They leave traces, or they evolve. They find new hosts. I mean, COVID is a perfect example of this. But the sweating sickness cut off. Like, someone had, like, severed, like, a chicken head or something. Like, it's just crazy to me. Like, totally severed a connection. And then there are all these modern incidences, the hauntings at former outbreak sites, the mysterious deaths of researchers, the continuing reports of supernatural activity in places where victims died centuries ago. It's as if the sweating sickness left behind some kind of spiritual residue that still affects these locations. And I think the most disturbing possibility is that the sweating sickness was exactly what some of those medieval practitioners believed it was, a supernatural weapon that could be summoned and controlled. If that is true, then it didn't disappear. It's just dormant, waiting for someone with the knowledge and the motivation to call it back. Yeah, I don't like that. That's scary. So there's one last piece of this puzzle that I haven't told you about yet. And it's probably the creepiest of the creepiest of the creepiest part of the whole story. Okay, ready? In 1953, during renovations at the Tower of London, workers discovered a hidden chamber behind a wall in one of the medieval buildings. Inside this chamber were dozens of documents, books, and artifacts that appeared to date from the Tudor period. Most of the materials were rotted beyond recognition, but several documents survived, well enough to be partially translated. These papers appeared to be records kept by someone involved in what they called the Great Working, a magical operation designed to secure the Tudor dynasty rule over England. The documents described rituals performed at specific locations around London ceremonies, timed to coincide with political events, and most disturbingly, detailed instructions for summoning what they called the Sweating Death to eliminate enemies of the crown. Wow. These papers suggested that the sweating sickness was deliberately created and controlled by a group of occultists working for the Tudor monarchs. According to the documents, the disease could be directed at specific individuals or groups and could be activated or deactivated at will by those who knew the proper rituals. The documents were classified by the government and weren't made public until 1993, when they were quietly donated to the British Museum's collection of historical curiosities. Even now, access to these materials is very restricted, and there is like a crazy extensive approval process that you have to go through for any sort of researchers who want to study them. But here's another really good messed up part. According to these documents, the knowledge of how to control the sweating sickness wasn't lost when the disease disappeared. The rituals and the instructions were preserved, passed down through a secret lineage of practitioners who maintained the ability to summon the disease if England ever faced an existential threat. Wow. The documents suggest that this knowledge still exists. It's hidden away somewhere, waiting for a crisis so severe that it will justify its use. Tell me that doesn't terrify the living shit right out of you, because it does me. And I don't know if I fully believe it, but I can't stop thinking about it. And at this point, with the way the evidence is stacked and all the different documentations, I'm leaning far more to belief than skeptic on this one. Because if it's true, then the sweating sickness isn't really gone. It's just sleeping and waiting for someone to pick it up, like wake it up. Yeah. Uh-huh. So there you have it, Creepy Crew. The sweating sickness. England's most terrifying medical mystery, and possibly something much darker than anyone wants to admit. Was it a natural disease that we simply don't understand yet? Viral, bacterial, that, you know, somehow maybe went extinct? Or was it something supernatural, a curse or a magical weapon that terrorized England for over 60 years before finally being dismissed or controlled? The truth is, honestly, we're probably never really going to know for sure unless something really bad happens. So the evidence is too fragmentary, there's a lot of contradictory in the evidence and that I've seen here too. And it's honestly just really way too freaking weird to fit into any like nice and neat little package of an explanation. But what I do know is this: the sweating sickness violated every rule that we think we understand about disease. It appeared and disappeared without explanation. It targeted victims in ways that were almost intelligent, wouldn't you say? And it left behind a legacy of paranormal activity that continues to this day. Now, whether you believe in supernatural aspects or not, the historical reality of the sweating sickness is terrifying enough. Imagine living in a world where a disease could strike anyone, anywhere at any time and kill them within hours while they remained conscious and aware of what was happening. Imagine knowing that the greatest doctors of your time were completely helpless against it, that wealth and status could not protect you, and that it might come back at any moment without warning. That's the world that people in Tudor England lived in for over 60 years. And if some of these theories are correct, it might be the world we're still living in today. I think it is. Just saying. The sweating sickness reminds us that there are still mysteries in our world that we cannot explain, forces that we don't understand, and perhaps powers that we're better off not investigating too closely. So the next time you're feeling fevering or unusually sweaty, maybe think twice about what might be causing it. Because if the legends are true, the sweating sickness is still out there somewhere, waiting in the shadows of history for the right moment to return. All right, you guys. I'm going to leave you with that. And I hope that you love today's episode. If you do have a little extra moment, I would really, really appreciate it. If you could just click those 5 stars for me and leave a review, it really does help the podcast to get in front of more people. And that means the world to me. You guys have been so awesome with that. I am so appreciative of all the reviews so far. And if you want to hang out more often, please feel free to hit me up over on Instagram at creepy_shit_podcast or over on TikTok at creepyhoststar. And I will catch you next week. And remember, until next week, wait a minute. I just totally botched that, but that's okay. We're going to keep going. Remember, sometimes the creepiest shit is also the truest. Bye.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.